appointed it.
Yeah.
Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 15. Testimony. Shabda is the third source of valid knowledge. Shankya holds the same view of Shabda as Nyaya, and so the reader is referred to the discussion on the subject in the chapter on Nyaya. Right, so in other words, it's coming from someone who is qualified, right? Apta, someone who has realization and is practicing. Right? So that's considered authority, right? Because if you're not practicing it, then how do you know that it works? So that means, of course, then that broadens it. That can even be, if it's not Shastra, but it's still someone who is practicing what they're talking about, is working. So then you could take it as a fact. So your ordinary knowledge, mundane, day-to-day knowledge, then someone who is actually knows the field and is practicing it, then they can be an authority in that, right? So that's just a general thing of authority. But otherwise, specifically, we know if it's not based on Shastra, then even that kind of knowledge is not so important, you know, unless it's just standard ordinary, you know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, if it comes to spiritual, these kind of elements, then it has to be based on Shastra. At the other ones, if it's based on Shastra, nice. If it's not, if it's practical, it can still work. You know, like how your car functions, or, you know, stuff like that. How much air to put in your back tire, or, you know, stuff like that. You know, so it's like. Mm-hmm. According to Shankya philosophy, the universe is full of pain and misery. And even what is thought of as pleasure is mingled with sorrow because all pleasures ultimately end in disappointment, which is the basis of misery, right? Because if you have any desire for the results, it always has to end in misery, right? Because passion means it's nice in the beginning and pain at the end. So it will always be like that. It's just the way it's designed, right? So no one can complain because it's designed that way.
So it works.
Yeah. The cause of suffering being ignorance in the sense of non-discrimination between the self and matter. Freedom from suffering must come from knowledge of the distinction between the two. But this saving knowledge is not merely intellectual understanding of the truth. It must be a direct knowledge or clear realization of the fact of the self as not the body. Once we realize that we are spirit soul, we become free from all suffering. To realize the self, we require a long course of spiritual practice, with devotion to and constant contemplation of the truth that the soul is different from the body. So their whole aspect of analyzing everything is simply so that we can distinguish the soul is not the body. Because we notice when we were discussing like how the intelligence works, this reflectionism, then it's actually quite efficient in understanding how separate we are from it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Practice
with devotion to and constant contemplation of the truth. So practice with devotion to the truth. So they're just meaning that you're committed to. It doesn't mean devotion to the Lord. you know, in the atheistic. If it's in the Vaishnava sense, then yes, it's because the truth is Krishna.
Yes.
Right. So in other words, there, because you can't direct devotion to something impersonal. So technically, you can't direct devotion to Brahman. Right? Means we understand it's Krishna and his energy, so we're directing it towards the person who is expanding as Brahman, who's the basis of Brahman. But Brahman itself is that's you just see that as the end. You can't be devotion, because devotion means there's an exchange. Like that. So here it would simply mean commitment to the truth if it's atheistic. And if it's theistic, then there would be devotion to the absolute personality of Godhead. So when you understand you're separate, then it does. It frees you from the material nature. But that's not enough. Then you have to connect yourself to the spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, it's efficient for getting you out of the material world. But on its own, it's not going to get you into the spiritual. None of these processes will. Right? It's only through devotion you can get into the spiritual world. So all of them are committed to freeing you from the material world, or Karma Mimamsa to try to make it nicer. You know, that's it's okay. Prayojana. Two questions may arise. How can two such different and opposing principles, such as Purusha and Prakriti, cooperate? And what is the interest that inspires them to interact with one another? Right? Mm-hmm. Much of the time, every Grihastha, all the Grihasthas are asking this question. Right? Shankara replies that just as a blind man and a lame man can cooperate with each other in order to get out of a forest. So which one's lame and which one's blind, right? Oh, it means different times is different. Okay. Yeah, and you might end up with the Purusha's in both.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Does one exclude the other?
Yeah. Okay. Shankara replies, just as a blind man and a lame man can cooperate with each other in order to get out of a forest by the lame man's guiding, while the blind man carries him, so do non-intelligent Prakriti and inactive Purusha combine with each other and cooperate to serve their purpose. Right? Because there is lame man, blind man is a Vedic analogy. Right? But so they're using it in this way. Right? So here's what you got. Non-intelligent Prakriti and inactive Purusha. Okay. Just trying to think. Inactive means the blind man, right? Yeah, it would have to be. And then non-intelligent is the lame man. Okay. What is their purpose? Okay. Prakriti requires the presence of Purusha in order to be known or appreciated. And the Purusha requires the help of Prakriti in order to distinguish itself from Prakriti and thereby realize liberation. Thus, according to Shankya philosophy, the goal of the manifestation of the universe is to attain liberation. But then, okay, you've attained liberation, but where does that leave Prakriti? Because once you're liberated, you're not knowing or appreciating Prakriti anymore. So it's kind of like, it seems to be a bit one-sided here, yeah. You know, it's like, because, but at the same time as, why would Pradhan, which is perfectly balanced, need to be known and appreciated, so therefore goes out of balance and then creates everything? So it's a bit, you could say that the lame man, blind man would kind of apply to those who profess this particular branch of Shankya philosophy, that they're a bit, how you say, non-intelligent and yeah, like that. There's something wrong here. Does that make sense? So, in other words, in connection with Vaishnavism, it's a very good system, because the point is the Prakriti is serving the Lord, but because the Purusha thinks the Jiva thinks he's Purusha, he's given that opportunity to try to know and appreciate Prakriti. But that Prakriti is unconscious. The point is that something unconscious doesn't care if it's appreciated or not.
Yeah.
Right?
And if the goal is liberation, then wouldn't it be easier if the universe just didn't manifest? I mean, then you'd be liberated.
Yeah, but it's kind of like it works out is that the one gets Like what we say is, okay, Prakriti gets recognized, but then at some point you don't recognize. And so that's even worse, is you're nice to someone and then you stop being nice to them.
You know,
so it's not... It doesn't work out so well. I guess their point is Purusha is, Prakriti is unconscious, you know, no intelligence, nothing like this. So therefore, it doesn't actually require. But if it required at one point, why would it not require at the other point? Why wouldn't it be dissatisfied and come out and get you? You know, as you're outside, and kind of reach your arm out. How do you like the manifestation today? Oh, very nice. You always say that. Okay.
It just goes on.
Yeah. Okay. So, but the point that they've got it, that the goal of the manifestation of the universe is to attain liberation, that's partially correct, in that to get out of it, to not be entangled or interested in it, is the purpose of the universe. The purpose of the universe is to make you not interested in the universe. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what it's for.
Right. To not be interested in the universe or in Prakriti, or dealing with her.
Well, the manifestation of the universe means that there is the idea that I can control and enjoy energy. Right? The Lord's energy.
And energy is Prakriti?
Means the if you have that attitude, the only one you'll get is external potency, because it's unconscious.
I mean, in their understanding.
You know, it's just like this. Let us say the kid, you know, how they play with the doll, right? You know, they get the doll flies around and that, and then does something, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. Okay, now it's okay as long as it's a doll, but if they decide they're going to do the same thing with you, you wouldn't appreciate it, right? So it's the same thing as if you're going to be crazy, then you're crazy with dead matter, right? And so dead matter actually doesn't care, right? So the problem is that, you know, the person of external energy, the problem is you're not following God's laws. That's her problem. But otherwise, it's not that, you know, you like the rock, don't like the rock, or, you know. And so it means it became a rock just so you'd tell it was a nice rock. Oh, you're such a nice rock, you know, like that. And then the universe goes, ah, it's all worthwhile now. It's just, it means like, you know.
Like the smiling rock we had earlier.
Yeah, what happened to the smiling rock?
He made a run for it. I saw him face down over in the rubble there, and after that he disappeared.
Okay. So the problem is that to attain liberation is correct, that you're going to deal with it. It is going to give you pain and misery, right? And so this purpose is to liberate, but not just liberate, but its point is bring you back to your natural position as servant of Krishna. Because that's what one's supposed to be doing, because that will give you actual happiness. Because why would you care about pain and misery, right? The rock doesn't care. Because there is no element of pleasure or anything in the rock. Right? You only register something that you have qualities of. Does that make sense? You know, like a lizard, it gets cold outside, it doesn't care, actually. Moves a little slower. You know, so it's a little annoying in winter, it's really hard to catch lunch, because, you know, it's like, by the time you get over there, lunch is like gone. You know, so, does that make sense? So, but it's not that it feels any pain in the coldness, right? We do, because the body's naturally warm. So for the lizard, it gets hot, it gets cold, it doesn't really matter. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the element of pleasure and pain only bothers the living entity, because there is the nature of ananda. It's the quality of the soul. So therefore, having relationships, interacting, that gives pleasure, gives happiness, is the normal state. So that's why it would bother you. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then the idea of getting liberation has a meaning, because you can situate yourself where it's eternally happy. But just being eternally happy isn't actually the point. It's being situated in that relationship that actually causes that. So you're going to be eternally happy when God's eternally happy. And that's going to come when you're serving God favorably, right, in a relationship. Does that make sense? So all that's left out here. Right? So they've gotten the point of that you're supposed to get out of the material world. So basically, it means all five of them do that. You know, and then Karmi Mum says the idea is if it's nice, you don't actually worry that it's the material world. Right? So then you go, you engage in that way. Right? So, yeah. The manifestation of the universe into the 23 evolutes of Prakriti is not meant to create bondage for Purusha, but rather to help Purusha realize that it is free and distinct from Prakriti. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, technically it's not meant to bind. It's mm-hmm. meant to, so you realize that you're not the body. But as long as you think you're the body, then you deserve to be bound up here. Otherwise, if you're floating around in the rest of the cosmos, you'll create trouble. Right? Although it may seem that external objects are meant for physical, mental, or internal enjoyment, it is not really the case because the mind, ego, and intellect do not function for themselves. Right? Because we established that they're the ones that are actually doing the activity. Right? And the experience is there. But the point is, because the living entity identifies with it, then he thinks, I'm enjoying. Right? They exist to provide experiences to Purusha. Feelings of pain and misery experienced because Purusha falsely identifies with Rajas and Tamas, forgets its capacity to see through its false identification. Does that mean?
Purusha's capacity to see through.
Yeah, but it means that, but he forgets.
He forgets his capacity, so that's why he identifies.
Oh, to see through its false, meaning to see beyond.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, see beyond. I was just saying to see through.
Oh, right.
Through your false identification, you see Rajas Tamas and like that. He's forgotten that. You know, but now he seems to be very well remembered that. Okay. Thus, also, Purusha fails to use Prakriti's sattvic manifestations as efficient instruments for discriminating the self from the non-self. Right? So that means that's what's recommended, the sattvic. So that's what the Shastras give. That's the importance of testimony, Shabda. Mm-hmm. Is that we'll say that the sattvic situation is the best. The predominance of Rajas and Tamas in the mind, ego, and intelligence does not allow these instruments to filter external experiences properly. So Purusha received unfiltered, contaminated experiences, and ignorant thinks it is suffering the pain and misery reflected by the intellect. So it identifies with it, but you're not. It's just like, it means the so you're watching something, and some people are involved in all that, and you identify with it. So as they're suffering, you're suffering. Mm. But actually, you're not suffering. It means they're the ones that have a problem. You don't have a problem. You're just watching what. So that's kind of what's happening. Mm-hmm.
Like that. How does the knowledge liberate the soul like that?
Means their idea is if you don't identify with the material energy, you do not think that there's anything here to gain. So there's no endeavor, you know, you don't identify with here, so ignorance is gone. And you there without identifying, you don't endeavor for anything trying to gain pleasure or pain here. I mean, people don't generally endeavor for pain, but whatever. Generally what it is there's basically what there is there's pain. And some identify it as pleasure and some identify it as pain. That's all. And then in another situation, it's reversed. You know, it's just like you walk out of your room and it's cold and you think, wow, this is terrible. For you, it's pain. But another one walks out and goes, wow, it's fresh. So like that, you know. And that's why I always notice I'm in the West. You know, it's freezing out. But when they come outside, instead of going, ooh, it's cold, because they'd have to say that basically every day of their life, they go, ooh, fresh. Like that. You know, I sit there, ooh, cold. They go, ooh, fresh. You know, I guess trying to make it look like, it's nice. You know, you wake up in the morning in your prison cell, and you wake up and looking at a different wall. Oh, that's different, you know. So, you know, something trying to make it look good, you know. So, you know. Oh, look, spacious. I can stretch my arms, you know. It's like that. Yeah, something. So he identifies with it, so therefore he finds the pleasure and pain in it, and that he suffers. So the idea is that the mode of goodness with knowledge, you'll free yourself from falsely identifying with the material energy, and therefore the pleasures and pains that come from that identification. And then the idea is then you're free. Yes, now you're situated in goodness. And if you took that to extreme, you come to the liberated platform. But still, they haven't addressed who the jiva actually is. They've only said he's eternal, right? Basically, but they're not. But they can't identify that he's sat, chit, and ananda. That they don't know. So because of that, then, but inherently, they're looking for happiness because they're soul, right? They're looking for knowledge because they're soul. They're looking for an activity in which to apply that knowledge, and they're looking for an identity. So the identity here is, I'm not the material energy. Okay, that's partially true. And that knowledge, and that the endeavor for it, that practice, will make me happy. So they've addressed Satchitananda without actually understanding the science of what they just did. Mm-hmm. So actually in ignorance, they're working out a spiritual process. But it will fall short because it's not actually addressing the needs of the soul. They've addressed the needs of the material energy. They've addressed the needs of the living entity to not be involved with it, but they haven't actually addressed the actual needs. So that's where it falls short. So the Shankhya is good for analyzing the world to get free from it. But that's where it ends. Right? So therefore, it's just part of the Vaishnava process. Right?
Because it's still based on the Vedas, there is some.
There's some. It's just like Bhakti.
Right track, but.
Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying that the all religions, all philosophies, are aspects bringing one to Vaishnava Dharma, or they're being misapplied and therefore taking you away from, like that. So in other words, if this is applied properly, it brings you the point of understanding and not the body, so therefore how to properly engage oneself in the Lord's service, right? I'm not the body, I'm the soul. The soul is a servant of God, therefore I should serve. I serve God, there's no misery. I don't serve God, there's misery, so that. But here is then they're taking it, it's taking him away because of the element of being atheistic. So there is no God. And so this whole process of liberation is supposedly having to happen on their own. So how is that working out? I mean, it's great. It means you have a certain amount of potency, but that much, if you get overwhelmed, then how is it? I mean, the point is, if you're telling Maya that she's really great and everything, like she says here she needs, right? Known and appreciated, so therefore, why would she let you go?
Yeah, she likes it.
And it's just here.
And also, why all happened if it was by the desire of pollution to get this potential?
Yeah, that's also a good point. That's true. That's also a point. Is that you understand? Is that if he got himself into this, why would he get himself out? Means the manifestation is there because it hasn't still been explained on how the whole thing started.
The committee, the cosmic committee.
Yeah, the cosmic committee or the individual who leaned on something that shouldn't have and pushed a button or something.
My bad, sorry.
My bad, yeah. Unlimited living entities. Oh, no. Yeah, so it doesn't explain why he would be here, because you're not dealing with the element of him being a person. So it doesn't really explain why he's coming here and where he'll go after. All they know is he's here, and it's not nice. So if we get out of here, it'll be better.
That's not sure. That's not sure. That's not sure. Because they don't know where they're going. So how could they know it would be better?
That's
they know
true.
This is not good.
Well, basically, this is not good. So if you get rid of this, then it has to get better. Yeah, it's just like it's really bad. It's bad in the frying pan. So if I get out of the frying pan, it'll be better. Problem is, they fall into the fire. Yeah. So you can see is that any philosophy it's not connected to the Vaishnava, principles, actually can't work. One, it doesn't answer the questions properly. It can't, because means, in other words, of philosophies, these are as good as it gets. You don't have any other mundane philosophies that are better than this, more technical, more clear, exacting. Because in this, they're very exacting. That's why it's so easy to see where it lacks. If you know the more technical, the Vaishnava. Does that make sense? So even though this is so technical, you can see what's wrong with it. With the other, it's so untechnical, it's so convoluted, it's even hard to tell what's going on. You know? That's the difficulty. You know? But they're very confident, and they talk a lot. And
you got this right.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Oh no, we have two more pages. I thought it was only that was it. I mean, because everything else, Prayojana, was like one paragraph. So I was thinking, wow, they got two. Shankya views Prakriti as a compassionate mother that provides everything to Purusha that he needs to understand his true nature, distinct from Prakriti, in her manifested and unmanifested states. Prakriti manifests herself out of compassion for Purusha, just as a mother's milk is produced out of compassion for a child. Unless it is somehow contaminated, the milk from the mother's breast is always healthful to the child. And likewise, the evolutes of Prakriti are healthful to Purusha unless they are contaminated by the predominance of Rajas and Tamas. False identification, selfish action, possessiveness, or lack of discrimination. But the difficulty is that those are two out of three of the qualities of the material energy, and when they're balanced, it's fine. So then, you know, it means it's nice. It means you give these things, and then everybody's happy. They stop thinking. Like you say, the green bird goes into the green tree, so it's all one.
Yeah.
You know, and so everyone, yeah, that's nice. Yeah, but still, there's a green bird in a green tree. Yeah. You know, like that. And there's a good chance the green bird's in the green tree because there's more green birds in the green tree, right? You know, and there's something to eat in the tree, and it's not green. So now his mother, compassionate mother, at the same time as before, the idea is there that it is needs that attention and all that.
You want to get out. She needs an attention, you want to get out from
her. Yeah, but she's compassionate, taking care, you know, it's kind of it's a problem. Both Prakriti and Purusha are infinite and eternal. When Prakriti is in her unmanifested state, she is so intermingled with Purusha that she becomes anxious to realize that he becomes anxious to realize his own true nature. Purusha's anxiety allows him to come even closer to Prakriti, and it is this move or intention towards her that inspires the latent forces in Prakriti to function. Right, so then out of her. But so she didn't have any need. So why is it after manifestation she has a need? So here it's like he has a need to know who he is. But then if he does that, means you just keep doing this.
But what?
That means you'll want to know who you are. You come into then the manifestation is there. Then you'll see that this is stupid. And then, you know, then understand your position. Then it all merges back in. And then after a while, then you go, hey, but that's actually what happens to the... And the Brahman platform is there, and then you have a need to actually be involved again because it's boring. You know?
But Maharaj,
how
is it that it says Purusha has, he becomes anxious to realize his own true nature, and then it says Purusha's anxiety allows him to come even closer to Prakriti? How does that work?
Closer. I mean, well, closer because there's manifestation, because now it's just so homogenous that you don't see anything.
Okay.
You know, so then there's manifestation, so that brings them closer to interacting. Because otherwise they're just, everybody's just there. But it's this move, that means he's made a move, but they're saying that he doesn't move. It's a material energy move. So, you know what I'm saying? So it's so... In other words, the element of move means he just has to have the desire.
Hmm.
You know?
And then Prakriti transforms.
Yeah, so then, yes. Yeah. Thus, Purusha initiates the manifestation of the universe. So that's one wants to know. So why is it manifests for everybody else? Like, you know, so then it is it's about the one does the thing, the whole starts the whole thing, and everybody else, hey, I was fine. You know.
How would you say which one?
Huh? How do you decide which one started it?
So many people can start. So many people.
Yeah, you can go around it. Did you start it? You started. I know you started it.
There you are.
I know it's you. You know. Don't ignore me there. Okay, this Purusha. Okay. Thus, Purusha initiates the manifestation of the universe, and thus property helps Purusha realize himself as distinct from her. Right? But the thing is if she's helping him realize he's distinct from her, I mean, she already knows she's distinct from him.
She's inert matter.
But how would she then help him to be distinct from her? Because that indicates knowledge when she doesn't have knowledge, right? So it's a lot of fine points missing.
Didn't they say before that, you know, Pragati is unconscious, and now they're giving her a personality?
Yeah, so it means therefore she's compassionate. But they're taking it that it means they'll explain that the Purusha, the Jiva, because of that proximity, therefore it takes on that quality. But we see that that quality only is taken on through the intelligence.
Right.
It doesn't say that the reflectionism is it's making other things work, but you only have that seeming consciousness in intelligence. But the thing is, here is like Prakriti as a whole is dealing in this way. So yeah, it does have, it becomes short here. Mm-hmm. It's not well thought out. In other words, if you want to be cheated, then here's one of the ways. You know, they'll half explain it, and if you want to be cheated, then you're happy to take it. You know? Yeah. But when through ignorance Purusha forgets his purpose in coming closer to Prakriti, then instead of discriminating himself from the unconscious principle, he entangles himself with it. So it's just supposed to be, he's just supposed to be, you know he's different, and so only dealing with the mode of goodness element, then he'd know he's different, and then go back to being happy that he's different. You know, but somehow or another, due to ignorance, then he gets involved. But the ignorance and passion is part of Prakriti.
Mm.
You know,
mm.
So then, you know, so what are those there for? What are their purposes?
Mm.
The moment he remembers his purpose and discriminates himself from this manifest world and from its cause. But he's the cause, right? He realizes his true nature and recognizes his freedom. Just as the chef continues cooking until the food is cooked and stops the moment it is ready, so Purusha continues to flow in the current of life until his purpose is fulfilled. I'm not sure if he'd get many... I'm not sure if Michelin would recognize this like that. The moment the highest goal of life, realization, is attained, he stops flowing in that current. Likewise, a dancer performing to entertain her audience continues to dance until the audience is satisfied. The moment the course of dance, which depends on the audience's duration of enjoyment, is fulfilled, the dancer stops her dance. In the same way, the great dancer, Prakriti, continues to dance until her discriminating function is accomplished. The moment she accomplishes her job, she withdraws herself back into her unmanifest state. Right. But how would she know that?
She's unconscious.
Yeah, this is the problem. The purpose of the manifestation of Prakriti is to show herself to Purusha so he can realize that he is distinct from her. Okay, he said that again. The moment Purusha realizes that he is not the external objects, then the entire manifestation is withdrawn. But why would he have to see external to know who he is? Why can't he know who he is directly from who he is?
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be just easier to just, you know, when he says, you know, who am I? And then they just said, you know, you're a jiva floating around in, you know, in space, you know?
Oh. And also, if it's said that that tamas and rajas are qualities of Prakriti, when the Purusha needs to realize who he is, isn't that already ignorance?
You would have to say it's ignorance, because he doesn't know, and then he has that desire, the anxious, he wants a result, that's passion. So that would already indicate that the material energy is functioning. But it's only until he brings himself closer.
And also,
it
said that the human function realized that he is not an external object. Entire manifestation is withdrawn, meaning you realize that everything is withdrawn and withdrawn from you.
Yeah, what about everybody else? Yeah, and at that moment it's withdrawn, and then what? You're just sitting there, but
and when
yeah, it still hasn't defined who he is, right?
I mean, these people, they don't see those people.
It appears not. Otherwise, they wouldn't think so much and come up with these, you know.
They keep themselves busy all day long.
Well, it would go along with the element of what Yudhishthira Maharaj says about how the most amazing thing is how everybody's dying, but everybody thinks they'll live forever. You know, everybody. You know, it's like how many people have frozen to death on top of Everest. You know, or some of these others. So many, right? You know, but they still go and think, I won't freeze, right? Like that, so many things, I mean, people have broken their legs skiing, right? All these different. It's just car accident, everything's just. But if somehow it won't happen to us, so it's the same way with these guys. It's illusion. So Maya covers their intelligence. So it's quite intelligent, but at the same time, is not really intelligent. You know, just that we're so accustomed to true intelligence, true knowledge, that this other stuff sounds.
I read one Mayavad Bhagavad Gita, just the purport for 1427. It was amazing. It was the most amazing nonsense I've ever read. It was just very long words and sentences within sentences, and because it's about how he's the basis of Brahman, right? And it was fascinating to read.
That didn't say anything.
It made no sense at all.
No sense. Yeah, no, they're good with words. As long as it sounds good. I remember I was at one big Indian's house. And he had this library. It was all the books of Aurobindo. And he was saying, he's such a sadhu, right, you know? That it says nothing that he says makes any sense, but it sounds so nice and wonderful, but it makes no sense. So then the conclusion is not that it's nonsense, but it must be so elevated that I myself and my lower mundane, us mortals cannot understand it. But that's the thing, the more it's convoluted and this and that, the more it must be so advanced. So that's just another way of
classic mundane
getting cheated. Yeah.
Also the West. I mean, if you have no idea what people are talking about, they must be very intelligent.
Yeah.
And now he sees the prayojana part. It's not what is the result.
Result is just basically you realize yourself. So then you go back to kind of infinite, eternal. Basically, all there is jiva. And Prakriti, there is no other energy. There is no higher Purusha. So it's just all there, and it just sometimes manifests. And then
so they mean they come closer, then the whole thing starts, then they understand.
It must be, because after a while, unless it just happens once, that you need to know, but the point is, it seems to always be going on, so that must be. Yeah.
This is also interesting why prayojana usually is very, very brief. Here it's like several pages.
Yeah, but they're saying the same thing. They're just giving different reasons why to convince you that, the chef, the dancer, you want to know. It all sounds very good. In actuality, pure consciousness, Purusha, is subject neither to bondage nor to liberation because he is never really in bondage. Because technically you're not, means that we say the soul is pure. So he's only thinking he's in bondage because he's identifying with it. So that aspect is true. But the point is because you are a person And the natural thing is to interrelate with other persons, and that way find happiness. That's why we're interrelating, but we're looking for our own happiness. That's why we're dealing with material energy. We don't get satisfaction. So that's why we're not involved, really. Because you can't interact with dead matter. So there has to be some mechanics with which you identify with it, and then therefore the experiences of it, you know, that, you know, seem to be going on. Right? You know, it's like, how do you interact with a rock unless you become a rock? You know, then you can talk rock. You know.
It's a song, right, from the 70s. I am a rock.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So, yes, he's realized.
Yes, yeah, he's realized.
The concepts of bondage and liberation, pain and suffering, the result of ignorance or false understanding. Okay, footnote 7. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.26, it is stated, the concept of material bondage and the conception of liberation are both manifestations of ignorance, because that means, how do you get bound when the soul is pure? But how do you get liberated if you were never bound? Right? Because you can't be liberated for something that you're not bound by. If you're always free, there's no such thing as becoming free. Being outside the scope of true knowledge, they cease to exist when one correctly understands that the pure spirit soul is distinct from matter and always fully conscious. At that time, bondage and liberation no longer have any significance. That's why we're not worried about it. Just as day and night have no significance from the perspective of the sun. Yeah, I mean, he never has to worry about it getting dark, does he?
What's up, Mr.?
Yeah, it makes it so nice and clear, right? Because then you can see what's the actual point of this. In other words, they're taking a Vedic point, but then they're misapplying it. And so they're getting something, but it's not complete, because it's only when it's, yeah. Purport. Material bondage is illusion, because the living entity actually has no real relationship with the material world. Because of false ego, the conditioned soul identifies himself with matter. Therefore, so-called liberation is simply giving up an illusion rather than release from actual bondage. Mm-hmm. Right? Just like material means functioning within the illusion, mm-hmm. So liberation means giving up the illusion. But the soul itself is always transcendentally situated. Yet, even if we think that the suffering, the material illusion, is real, and that liberation is thus a meaningful release from suffering, the mere absence of material existence is still insignificant compared to the achievement of factual spiritual life, which is the positive eternal reality opposed to the negative illusion of material life. So even if you say you get out of the material world, you free yourself, but it's still insignificant compared to the natural position of the living entity doing something in the spiritual world, interacting on the spiritual platform. Right? So that's the thing, is that he's been so distracted by material life, because life is what's important. So now getting out of material life is not very significant, because it's getting into spiritual life that is significant. Right? Because the living entity, unless he's acting and interacting, then there's no real meaning to being having life.
So for us, there's no complete liberation.
No, that's why we don't worry about it. That's why I just don't worry. So I will purify myself, free myself from all my sins, and then I'll be happy. So we don't generally worry about that kind of stuff. You know. So the point is the only advantage to being purified is that then there's no distractions to distract you from thinking of Krishna. But the point is it's thinking of Krishna. Thinking of Krishna is an endeavor in itself. It's not by, if I purify myself, then automatically I'll think of Krishna. No, you still have to think of Krishna. But the point is thinking of Krishna, impurity gets in the way of that, because it distracts you. Right? You can only think of one thing at a time. That's what the mind does. It can only deal with one thing at a time. So the mind is focused on Krishna, then there's nothing else that's important. But if these other things are seen as important, it gets distracted. You know, sometimes this one, sometimes that one. But Krishna is just one. So that's why in the spiritual world, everyone can cooperate together, because Krishna is the focal point of everybody. They may be doing different aspects of it, but it doesn't matter, because Krishna is the center. But here there's a problem, because what you're focusing on in the way of distractions there's unlimited, and each one has a different distraction or combination of those distractions, so they're never exactly the same. You know what I'm saying? The only one we have that common ground with is exactly the same as the Lord. Right? So we're thinking the quality or that aspect of the relationship, that's the Lord. But we forget that that can only be appreciated if we are surrendered to the Lord in that devotional service. Right? But if we're trying to function separately, then we'll be also be just dealing with that particular aspect of the material energy, the forms that manifest that quality we're looking for. But according to our karma, it's what's going to be the quality of what is that manifestation. And generally speaking, you know, it's not perfect. You know, if you're around here, it's not perfect. You know? So it's just designed like that. So technically, all it is just changing the consciousness. As Prabhupada's message, you don't have to change anything, you just change the consciousness. Because then you're spiritually situated. Right? But then we worry about, no, but what about the forms? What about this? And all these things. Because we think they have meaning. But they don't have meaning. Right? They only have meaning if they're connected to the Lord. So the point is you change the consciousness, then you change everything by connecting everything to the Lord. So you're not going to worry about, well, can I connect this to the Lord? Can I connect? It's already connected to the Lord. It's your illusion to think it's not.
Why people are so enamored by the words, the more difficult it sounds, like Aurobindo and all those guys, when we naturally, like Srila Prabhupada, use such a simple language so anybody can understand what's the nature of
it. Well, you'd have the one is that ignorance being the basis of the material existence, anything you can't understand must be something, you know, mystical, more powerful, something. So either you appreciate it, you're afraid of it, or something. The other thing is that an expert, you know, likes the trappings. Right, the flavor, the mood, the situations, the words, like that. A master is living that, so it's not that you require those things to make it happen. So he can speak very simply. Right? Because the point is you have big words that are very nice and exact by saying one word, but you can also use a whole bunch of small words and say the same thing. So, since people are used to smaller words, then if you use those, then everybody understands. Because the big words, if you have that vocabulary, you'll understand. But it's not that everybody can't understand. But the intellectual, he thinks that only I can understand, only because he has that vocabulary. But as far as the concepts go, they're used to playing around with concepts and trying them this way and that way. But much of the time you see is that they're not actually that good. Because when you bring up something alternative to what they think, they can't accommodate it at all. You know, so you can explain something to a kid that, you know, a big intellectual wouldn't be able to understand. You know, like that. So they function in their little world of that. And it's very narrow, and as time goes, it gets smaller and smaller. Before it was, you know, everyone had read all the literatures, and then they specialized in one particular area. Now they've only read the literature in that specialized area, and then they specialize within that. You know, does that make sense? You know, specialize in this literature, and I've done my thesis on page 57.
Yeah, way ahead of the guy that did it on page 54.
Yes, like that. But the basis of the guy in 58.
Yes, that's true. Take credit for that too.
Yeah. Okay. Therefore, so-called liberation is simply the giving up of an illusion rather than release from actual bondage. Right? Yet, even if we think that the suffering of the material illusion is real and that liberation is thus a meaningful release from suffering, the mere absence of material existence is still insignificant compared to the achievement of factual spiritual life, which is the positive eternal reality opposed to the negative illusion of material life. Ultimately, Krishna consciousness, or pure love of God, is the only significant, meaningful, and permanent status for every living entity. Right? Significant, meaningful, and permanent.
Right? Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, that's very, very clear, exact. Yeah. So do we catch this? They catch points, that the technical points are just part of our philosophy, but unfortunately it becomes the bogus philosophy because they leave out the personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him. Mm-hmm. Right? Because here you just have the jiva and material energy. Mm-hmm. Prakriti binds us, the concept of bondage and liberation, pain and suffering are the results of ignorance or false understanding. Mm-hmm. Prakriti binds herself with the rope of her own manifestation. And when Purusha recognizes her as distinct from him, she liberates herself. But the point is liberates herself from herself? What does that mean? Then she just goes back into it like that. So then it's saying, well, if you're different, then who's actually getting bound? So therefore, she's just doing it to herself. And that, but why would she do that to herself?
She's unconscious.
Yeah. It's just, it's
unconscious liberated.
Yes.
Right. The IT movie.
Hmm?
You know, when people get some of them.
So yes, that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. But the only thing is somehow the computer doesn't need you to tell her that it's nice.
No. That's the
basic condition.
Okay.
Personal.
Okay. As we mentioned earlier, there are eight attributes of Mahat, or Buddhi, the intellect, which is the prime evolute of Prakriti. These eight are attachment and detachment, vice and virtue, non-meritorious and meritorious actions, and ignorance and knowledge. Right? So knowledge was the only one that was, you know, by which you could get out. Right? Mm. Prakriti binds itself with the first seven attributes and liberates itself with the eighth. The light of knowledge. Thus, bondage and liberation are both concepts of the intellect. So that means it's just her pastime. So what's it got to do with it? So in other words, if we need to know who we are, then she has this whole pastime with herself.
Yeah.
Because she's a compassionate mother.
Yes.
But she's unconscious.
But she's...
It would appear so, but at the same time she's unconscious, so how would she know who she is? But she manifests all this, but if the jiva isn't interacting, then there is no manifestation.
But she gets offended.
And then makes him suffer. Like that. Yeah, no, it gets weird. Through the practice of the yoga of discrimination, that is, the repeated affirmation of non-identification with the body, senses, or mind, such as, for instance, I am not the experiencer, I am not the doer, whatever is going on is in Prakriti, one polishes one's intellect and becomes more consciously aware of one's true nature. This type of knowledge or understanding leads one to the state of freedom from all confusions and false identifications, and thus one attains the knowledge of the true self. After the self realizes its true nature, all anxieties are dissolved. Then the self becomes disinterested in seeing Prakriti, and Prakriti becomes disinterested in showing herself, because she has been seen and her purpose has been fulfilled. Prakriti and Purusha are both infinite and all-pervading and are therefore eternally together, like two sides of the same coin. But when their purpose is fulfilled, the process of manifestation ceases. So that means it's always manifesting and always, means it's always going on. Mm. Right? Because you get liberated. What about all the other unlimited? Mm. In the Shangyam philosophy, there are two kinds of liberation. Jivan Mukti and Videha Mukti. The liberation attained in one's lifetime is called Jivan Mukti. In this kind of liberation, a person continues his existence on this platform as a liberated being. He lives in this world and enjoys the worldly objects until he casts off his body. He continues his journey through worldly life just as a fan continues to revolve due to his previously generated speed for a while after it has been switched off. When all the samsaras, the impressions of past actions, are finished, then he casts off his body and is said to enter the Dideha Mukti, which is liberation after death. Yeah, so it's just a matter, yeah, means you can be liberated here, realized, and then once the body, then you go into the like the more longer situated, yes.
The Buddhist concept of bodhisattva, is that?
It's quite similar, like that. That you go on through all these things, and at one point, then it just disappears. So, I mean, it'd be common, because you're dealing with the mode of ignorance. So, it being the common principle, then they'll all have similar, you know. Right? It means it only goes into such detail because people are thinking, so then they'll ask about it. But then it's got to be in line somewhat with the Shastra. So then they'll pull things from the Shastra to explain. But the things that don't explain what they're doing, they leave that. That's mm-hmm. what Madhvacharya was saying.
A scholar from the line.
Okay.
Contemporary scholar.
Oh, okay. So then he's making the point is that the first four, they only pull verses from the Veda that support what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But the other verses, they don't deal with. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that. Shankar also does the same what he's doing, Vedanta Sutra. Those verses that are easy enough to make it look like what he wants, he'll use those. And then after that purport, he'll say, like this, you go on interpreting. Right? You know, he says, I've given you an example, now you do the rest. Means the rest can't be done. But he just says that, just to keep him busy, right? You know, like that. Okay. Footnote 8. In Shankya, moksha means complete cessation of pleasure and pain, arising through the association of the self with the manas, the senses and the sense objects. If the manas is settled steadily in the self, it is the state of yoga when there is neither pleasure nor pain. When true knowledge downs that, all are produced by causes. When true knowledge downs that.
When by true knowledge one understands. Yeah.
So when true knowledge, one understands that all are produced by causes, all that produced by causes are transitory, rise of the cells, but are not produced. Is this? Yeah, okay. This is Das Gupta. I was wondering why. How come it doesn't make any sense? It's an Indian philosopher. That's why. Okay. But are not produced by the self and are sorrow, and do not belong to me, the self. The self transcends all. Anything produced by causes, they're transitory, they come of themselves, not produced by the selves and the soul. In other words, the soul's not doing anything. So whatever's happening is produced by the mechanics and material nature, it's not produced by me. And so, therefore, all suffering and pain is not actually mine, it's the material energies. And so then, yeah, so I'm not involved. So on one sense, its platform, it's correct, because we're not involved. So because we're not actually bound in the first place. But the point is that, yeah.
Where's the alternative? Hmm? Positive alternatives?
Their positive alternative is simply just you stop doing that and then you'll be happy just in that state of doing nothing. So why they take that as a state of happiness? It sounds interesting, but it's not actually. So that's what Prabhupada is saying, is that they don't give that positive, right?
Maharaj, it sounds like the mood of jnana is being developed.
Yeah. No, it's all jnana. Means all these systems are all jnana. Like that. Karma Mimamsa, that's specifically karma, though they very intellectually apply it. So, you know, it's worked well. But this is all these are jnana. And that is, it's based on, we will see that pessimism, that you can't be happy in the world. And not that it's not correct, but it's just the idea, I can be happy, so therefore I can't be. So then they give up the idea of dealing with it. So that the idea is to end the existence. Right? So some may, the soul may remain, the soul may not remain, you know, like this. So you have all these different... So in these systems, the soul remains. You know, in Buddhism, the soul doesn't remain. So they just... But the idea of the actual position of the soul, that they don't understand. You know, that's why it's mundane. So these are, you could say, your, you know, most developed and based on the Veda mundane philosophies. Like that. You know, everything else will be, you know, just a shadow of this. It sounds, means if you could translate these other philosophies, you know, your more contemporary philosophies, into simple language, you know, not use their big fancy words, you'd find that it's, there's not a whole lot there. They go on and on and on and on. You know, like here, so many different angles on why. Because why would Prakriti, you know, do that? Because she's out of compassion. But why would she do that? You know, so they have these, their answers for however far anybody's asked questions. So they do. So, but their philosophy is actually not very big. It's just lots of explanations in different directions. Like, you know, she's, what was that? What happened to my paper? It's annoying. I have my paper to find all these.
Someone about the Israel
thing? Yeah. No, no, it's okay. It's good. Okay. Okay. Okay, we're down here. This is the last renunciation when all affections and knowledge become finally extinct. There remains no indication of any positive existence of the self at that time, and the self can no longer be perceived. Through this though this state is called Brahma-Bhuta, it is not in any sense like the Brahman of Vedanta, which is of the nature of pure being, pure intelligence, and pure bliss. This indescribable state is more like absolute annihilation without any sign of existence, resembling Nagarjuna's nirvana. So it's like Nagarjuna's Buddhism. This state is spoken of by the Shankyas as the goal, and also that of the yogins. Right? They're also going for this. When Rajas and Tamas are rooted out in the past karma, whose fruits have to be enjoyed or exhausted, and there's no new karma and new birth, the state of moksha comes about. Various kinds of moral endeavors in the shape of associating with good people, abandoning of desires, determined attempts at discovering the truth with fixed attention are spoken of as indispensable means. Truth thus discovered should be remembered again and again, and this will ultimately affect the disunion of the body with the self. As the self is avyakta, unmanifested, and has no specific nature or character, this state can only be described as absolute cessation. So in other words, it is like the same kind of thing. The soul just stops to exist. Because otherwise, where's the explanation? What happens after Nyaya when they attain this same state? They've done it through logic or have done it through the atomic theory. But the point is once they do that, what is that state? So it's basically just the cessation. Though they're not saying that they don't exist. They exist because they're saying that Jiva is eternal. But as far as there is no consciousness, so just they're unaware. So if they're unconscious and material energy is unconscious, what was the need to know yourself? And what's the need to be known? You know, so it doesn't really give much. That's why these can be defeated by these by the higher philosophies. So Vedanta can defeat all these because it's dealing with the actual nature of the soul. So now, four, yoga. Oh, okay. I was going to say, I just read that. See this line here? That's yoga. That's the whole thing. If you look very carefully,
basically,
the path of yoga.
Yeah.
You end, you know, here. So this ends Sambandha, and it goes down here, and this is the realization over there. Okay. Any questions? No? Not that. The word yoga is derived from the Sanskrit word root, yuj, which means to unite. The yoga system provides a methodology for linking up individual consciousness with the supreme consciousness. Right, so now at least we have some consciousness going on here, right? Before this is that. Means Nyaya acknowledges the supreme consciousness, but it's not that you're going to somehow or another be connected with that supreme consciousness after perfection. Right? Neither in Vaisheshika and then in Shankya, then there is no supreme consciousness, so everybody just kind of ceases to exist. Right? There are various schools of yoga, among which bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga, and kundalini yoga are especially well known. The yoga system that is counted as one of the six systems of Vedic philosophy is the Patanjali system, which will be reviewed here. This school of yoga, also known as Astanga yoga, the yoga of eight parts, is closely allied to Shankya philosophy. Indeed, Astanga yoga is the practical application of Shankya philosophy for the attainment of liberation. Footnote 9. Yoga means spiritual action, and Shankya means knowledge. Shankya lays emphasis upon knowledge, which is regarded as the only means to the supreme reality, whereas yoga gives its wholehearted support to meditation by which the mind is progressively stilled and thus gradually becomes fit for achieving the supreme stage. Yoga mostly accepts the metaphysics and epistemology of Shankya. Yoga believes in the Ishwara as the highest self distinct from other states, selves. Hence it is sometimes called Sheshvara Shankya, as distinct from the classical Shankya, which is Nirishvara. Right? So in other words, they have the highest self, though the other you just kind of like cease to exist. Right? So basically you kind of merge back into that homogeneous mass with the unconscious material energy. Right? But here is when they merge with the supreme consciousness. Right? So still their own consciousness ends. So it still becomes the impersonalist, where the existence of the soul stops, but somehow or another. Okay. Where was that? It is called Patanjala Yoga because it was systematized by the sage Patanjali. His work is known as Patanjala Yoga Sutra. There are various commentators on this text, Vyasa's being the most ancient and profound. This yoga system attempts to explain the nature of mind, its modifications, impediments to growth, afflictions, and the method for attaining what is described as the highest goal of life, kaivalya, absoluteness. Yoga being the practical application of Shankya philosophy for the attainment of liberation has similar concepts of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Sambandha. Okay, God is the perfect supreme being who is eternal, all-pervading, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. God is that particular Purusha who is unaffected by the afflictions of ignorance. So God is beyond the material. Right? So you see that in the Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Right? Shankya then has left this out. So they're accepting what would be more along the line of the Vaishnav Shankya. But at the same time, is they're not quite getting to that position. It should be, but they're not quite. Matter, prakriti, is the eternal and ever-changing unconscious material principle. 3, the soul is pure consciousness. Yoga accepts the Shankya view that prakriti and purusha have no origin in God.
What's their origin
then? What's their origin?
The lottery.
Cracker Jack's box?
Yeah. Hey.
some variety of breakfast cereal. You always get some surprise. You know, some...
Wait, I got a prakriti. You know? Anybody got any Purushas?
Okay. Maybe in a happy meal.
It's a mix of both. It's a mix of both. The eye and something.
Means you have the element of position of God. Like, so in other words, they're accepting the eternal, all-pervading, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, so all the Brahman elements. And the element that he's a being. But they don't quite get to the personal. Right? Though they get to Paramatma, that he has a form and this and that. But somehow or another, that element of form's not important to them. So it's not that I, you know, if he has a form, he's the supreme, then I would also have a form that would be somehow or another, you know, in proportion to my, you know, transcendental position. You know, so they somehow or another just miss the element of relationship. You know, seems to be. So, Abhideya, rather than stressing on discriminative knowledge as a means of attaining liberation, as Nyaya Vaisheshika and Shankya do, yoga lays down a practical method called the Eightfold Means of Yoga, Astanga Yoga. Practical. Arjuna, you know, said, you know, yeah, not overly practical. And Kshatriya's tendency happened to be very practical people.
What was it he said? Unbearable.
Yeah. Prayojana. The ultimate goal, according to yoga, is the state beyond thinking and feeling, in which the individual soul is linked with the Supreme Soul. So thinking and feeling, beyond thinking and feeling, means beyond thinking, you know, when we think and feel here, we're doing it for ourselves. So when you go beyond that, then that linking with the Supreme is useful. But don't make the mistake that that means there is no thought process. There is no, you know, feelings or anything. So they miss that. So, okay, you get rid of the material, but it doesn't mean that the spiritual won't be there. Sambandha, the concept of God. Patanjali accepts the existence of God, Ishwara. He holds that God is the highest object of contemplation for concentration and self-realization. God is the perfect supreme being who is eternal, all-pervading, omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. God is that particular Purusha who is unaffected by the afflictions of ignorance, egoism, desire, aversion, and fear of death. He is also free from all karma, from the results of actions, and from all latent impressions. Right? Means to say he is free from means he doesn't have, not that he has freed himself from. Right? Patanjali says that the individual has the same essence as God, but because of the limitations produced by afflictions and karma, one separates oneself from God consciousness and becomes a victim of this material world. Right, so that's correct in there, but the problem is when they reverse that, you know, they don't put you back into the natural relationship with the Lord. There is only one God. It is ignorance and creates duality. It is ignorance that creates duality from this one single reality called God. When ignorance is dissolved into the light of knowledge, all dualities are dissolved and full union is achieved. When one overcomes ignorance, duality dissolves and emerges with a perfect single being. Right? So in other words, your existence then merges back into the Lord. But then the point was, is then why did you need to come out of the Lord in the first place? Why would that be there? So that's unexplained, you know, just as any of these ones. So in other words, just as the soul somehow knows coming out of Prakriti because the need for the, but why would there be the need? How is something where it's means not separately conscious become separately conscious? What would cause that? You know, so that's the difficulty with any of these. So whether it's in the Supreme Lord, whether it's in Brahman, whether it's in Prakriti, right, because basically that's, I don't think you're going to get any other options, right? Right? It means that either the soul just existed, the individuality of the soul is always connected with the property, you know, or where they originated in God. But here he's saying he doesn't originate in God. So if he doesn't originate in God, why would merging back into the Lord be actually a good situation?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
okay. 10, footnote 10. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.237, it is stated. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external, illusory energy of the Lord. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as servant of the Lord. Right? So this is what they don't talk about. Right? You know, this element of fear arising as the material body, absorption in the external, right? You know, that they'll catch, but not the part that because he turns away from the Lord, he forgets his constitutional position as servant. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency of illusion called Maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipful deity and his very life and... Oh, there, soul. I didn't see the last. I thought it was the next page, and the next page doesn't have it. Okay. So this is the proper understanding. When ignorance is dissolved into the light of knowledge, all dualities are dissolved and full union is achieved. When one overcomes ignorance, duality dissolves and emerges with a perfect single being. That perfect single being always remains perfect and one. There's no change in the ocean, no matter how many rivers flow into it. And unchangeability is the basic condition of perfection. Right? Because that was the problem before, is that God can't have anything to do with it, because to have something to do with it, he'd have to be changing. So therefore, even though he exists, he's beyond. So if they have anything, then they're just merging in. But the point is if he didn't create it, where's the beings coming from? Yeah, and the point is how does he merge? Because then that would mean that there's isn't there an adjustment? You've added. You know, or you can say the adjustment is that you've come out. But the point, why would you come out? Okay. End here. Because now they'll get into the existence of God.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai.
Charanitai Gaurabhai.